All right, so today we're going to dive into a case that really kind of sets a major precedent when it comes to contract law.
Yeah.
It's the 1981 Arizona Supreme Court decision, Norton v. First Federal Savings.
Oh, yeah, Norton, a big one.
A huge one. And really, if you're out there and you're a law student trying to wrap your head around the whole concept of third-party beneficiaries
Right.
and contract assignments,
Oh, absolutely.
this case is like the blueprint.
Yeah, it really sets the stage for so much.
It does. And so, what we want to do today in this deep dive is we want to look at a couple of core questions that the court really had to wrestle with.
Okay.
So the first one was, were these folks who bought these lots in this subdivision, were they
Well.
considered intended beneficiaries of this performance bond that was in place?
Okay.
And then the second big question was, did First Federal Savings, did the bank essentially step into the developer's shoes
Right.
and assume his obligations through this assignment agreement?
Yeah, big questions.
Huge question. So
Yes.
to kind of set the stage here,
Yeah, let's paint a picture.
let's paint the picture.
Back in 1974,
Okay.
we have a group of individuals, including a Mr. Norton,
Okay.
and they purchased lots from a developer named Clyde Hutchison.
All right, so we got our players.
We've got our players, and the city of Flagstaff had this rule in place that said, hey, developers like Mr. Hutchison,
Okay.
you've got to get a performance bond.
Okay. Why is that?
Well, the performance bond in this case, it was with First Federal Savings, and it was meant to guarantee
All
that
right.
the essential off-site improvements, so think
Don't be
roads,
owning it.
plots,
Utility lines, exactly. That all that stuff would be completed.
makes sense.
So it's a way for the city to ensure that these things would be done.
Right, so they don't end up holding the bag later.
Exactly. They don't want to be stuck with the cost of doing it later on.
Right, so what happened? Did he actually follow through on all this?
Well, that's where things get sticky.
Okay.
Mr. Hutchison, he didn't finish those improvements.
And so you can imagine what happened. The lot buyers, they were left with unpaved roads,
Yeah.
missing utilities, and they're not happy about it.
No.
So they decide to take legal action.
Right.
Initially, they sue Mr. Hutchison
Okay.
and the city.
Okay, so they're going after both.
Yeah, they're covering their bases.
Right.
Later on, they bring First Federal Savings into the lawsuit.
Oh, so the bank's in the hot seat now.
Now the bank's involved.
Okay.
And their argument had a couple of key parts. First, they said, hey, we're third-party beneficiaries of that performance bond between Hutchison and First Federal.
Right, because they're the ones who are ultimately going to benefit from this, right?
Exactly. The finished roads, the utilities, it all leads back to them.
Right, so that's the first part of their argument.
Yeah.
What was the second angle?
The second piece was focused on this assignment agreement.
Okay.
They said, look, when Hutchison assigned some of his interest over to First Federal,
Okay.
the bank basically took on his responsibility to finish those improvements.
So they're saying you took the good with the bad.
Yeah, they're saying you can't just cherry-pick the benefits.
Right. You got to take on the responsibility too.
Exactly.
Okay, so what'd the trial court say about all this?
Well, the trial court actually sided with First Federal.
Oh, really?
They granted summary judgment in their favor.
So they basically said, no, the bank is not on the hook for this.
Yeah, essentially, they said the bank doesn't have a legal obligation to these lot buyers.
Okay, well, obviously that didn't sit well with the plaintiffs.
No, they appealed that decision,
Yeah.
and that's how it ended up before the Arizona Supreme Court.
Okay, so now we're at the big show.
Oh, it's getting serious.
So let's break down that first argument about third-party beneficiaries.
Right.
What did the Arizona Supreme Court ultimately decide about whether Norton and the other lot buyers actually qualified as third-party beneficiaries?
This is where Justice Gordon, who wrote the majority opinion, he laid down some really important groundwork.
Okay.
The key point here is this idea of an intended versus an incidental beneficiary.
Okay, so there's a difference.
Oh, there's a big difference, he said. For someone to have the legal standing of a third-party beneficiary, the contract itself has got to clearly show an intention to directly benefit that specific party.
Oh, so it can't just be like, oh, they'll benefit sort of by happenstance?
Yeah, it's not enough if they just benefit as a side effect, even if it seems obvious.
Got it. So even though, the homeowners obviously would have benefited from those roads being paved and the utilities being hooked up, the court didn't think that was enough to make them third-party beneficiaries.
That's right. They said the main purpose of that performance bond, according to the city ordinance, was to protect the city.
Right.
The city wanted to be sure those improvements would be done so they wouldn't have to dip into public funds later on.
Right.
The benefit to the lot buyers, while it was real and expected,
yeah,
it was seen as secondary to that main goal of protecting the city's finances.
I see. So because the bond didn't specifically say, hey, we're doing this for the lot buyers, that was a big deal for the court.
Yeah, that was a key factor. They said that intention to directly benefit that third party needs to be crystal clear.
Oh, so it needs to be spelled out.
It needs to be right there in the contract. They can't just be someone who kind of benefits down the line.
All right, so that clears up the whole third party beneficiary side of things. But what about that second argument about the assignment? Did First Federal take on those obligations to finish the improvements just because they accepted that assignment from Hutchison?
This part of the ruling really highlights a specific point in Arizona contract law.
Okay.
The court said when a contract is assigned, what usually gets transferred are the rights under that contract.
Okay.
The obligations or the duties of the person who's making the assignment, in this case, Hutchison.
Okay.
They don't automatically transfer over to the assignee, which was First Federal.
Okay, so just because you assigned your right to get paid under a contract doesn't mean you've also passed on your responsibility to do the work.
Exactly. The court said if they wanted to hold First Federal responsible for Hutchison's duties to those lot buyers, the assignment agreement would have to say explicitly that First Federal was taking on those responsibilities.
Oh, so it would have to be in black and white.
It would have to be spelled out. And when they looked at the agreement between Hutchison and First Federal, it wasn't there.
Oh, so it sounds pretty open and shut. Then no agreement, no transfer of duties.
That's how the court saw it. They also pointed out that First Federal did end up finishing some of the improvements.
Okay.
That saw that as coming from their obligations to the city under the performance bond itself.
Okay.
Not from taking on Hutchison's separate promises to the lot buyers.
Makes sense. So it was two separate things.
Two separate things.
Got it. Now, we know there was a dissenting opinion in this case. So what did Chief Justice Struckmeyer have to say about all this?
Chief Justice Struckmeyer, he really disagreed with the majority's take on the assignment of duties.
Well,
he said Arizona's law should follow the approach of the restatement of contracts.
Okay. And just to remind our listeners, what's the restatement?
The restatement, it basically proposes a set of rules for contract law, trying to make things consistent across states.
Yeah, it's kind of like a model code.
Exactly. And in this case, the restatement says that when you assign a contract, it's assumed you're also delegating the duties unless the contract says otherwise.
Oh, so it flips the script.
It flips the presumption.
Got it. So Struckmeyer felt like when First Federal took on those benefits from Hutchison's agreements with the lot buyers, they should also have been on the hook to finish the improvements.
That's right. He was concerned about fairness and practicality. He said, allowing someone to take the benefits without the burden could lead to some unfair outcomes.
Yeah. I mean, in this case, it seems pretty clear that the lot buyers got the short end of the stick.
Absolutely. They faced delays. They were living with incomplete improvements. It definitely caused them harm.
And we also had Justice Hayes concurring with the majority.
Hmm.
But he added some interesting nuances, didn't he?
Yes. Justice Hayes agreed with the outcome, but he wanted to stress the importance of context.
Okay.
He said, when you're trying to figure out if there was an implied assumption of duties, even without explicit language, you got to look at the bigger picture.
Okay.
He pointed to situations like loan agreements, where an assignment might be for security purposes.
Okay, so like collateral.
Exactly. Yeah. In those cases, he said, it might not make sense to automatically assume the lender is taking on all the borrower's obligations just by taking that assignment as collateral.
Yeah, that seems reasonable.
He felt that the specifics of First Federal's involvement, which had some aspects of a secured creditor relationship, supported the idea that they shouldn't be automatically responsible for Hutchison's duties to the lot buyers.
Okay, so even within the majority opinion, there was this recognition that the details of the assignment and the relationship between the parties really matter.
Yes, it wasn't a one-size-fits-all approach.
Okay, so let's zoom out a bit. What are the big takeaways from Norton v. Federal Savings? I'm thinking especially for those law students out there hitting the books.
Well, this case really drives home a few fundamental points.
Yeah. First, when it comes to third-party beneficiaries, clarity is key.
Right.
That contract has to clearly spell out that the parties intended to directly benefit that specific third-party, just incidental benefits aren't going to cut it.
Right. Like we said before, they need to be named.
They need to be identified right there in the contract.
So that distinction between incidental and intended beneficiary super important.
Yeah.
Norton really makes that crystal clear.
Couldn't agree more.
All right, so what's the second big takeaway?
Second big lesson is about Arizona's rule on contract assignments.
Okay.
Unless the assignment agreement explicitly says the assignee is taking on the assigner's duties.
Okay.
Those duties generally stay put.
They don't automatically transfer.
They don't. And this is a big difference between Arizona law and the restatement of contracts.
Right, which, like we said, operates under a different assumption.
Right. The restatement assumes duties are delegated unless the contract says otherwise.
Got it. So if you're drafting or reviewing an assignment agreement in Arizona, you got to be super clear about who's taking on what.
No room for ambiguity.
All right. So what's our third key point from Norton?
The third takeaway is all about performance bonds.
Okay.
Often required in these development projects, they're not automatically assumed to protect private individuals like
right.
those lot purchasers.
Got it.
The main beneficiary is usually the municipality trying to protect public funds.
Right.
If the intention is to also protect private parties, that needs to be explicitly stated in the bond agreement.
Okay, so basically it all comes down to making sure the contract is super clear, especially when you've got third parties involved or contracts being assigned.
Absolutely. Norton is a perfect example of why that clarity is so important.
It's like a cautionary tale, but also a roadmap.
Exactly. It's a guide for legal professionals to make sure the party's intentions are crystal clear when it comes to beneficiaries and transferring obligations.
Because if not, you're just asking for trouble.
We're opening the door to disputes and litigation.
So as we wrap up here,
mm-hmm.
I want to leave our listeners with a thought to chew on. How do you think this case would have shaken out if that performance bond had specifically named those lot purchasers as intended beneficiaries?
Interesting question.
And on the flip side, what are the bigger implications of requiring that explicit assumption of duties in contract assignments like Arizona does?
Yeah, versus having that presumptive transfer of duties like the restatement suggests.
It really gets you thinking about how we balance strict contract interpretation with ideas of fairness and policy.
It's a fascinating tension in contract law.
Well, thanks for diving deep with us today.
My pleasure.
And everyone listening out there, we'll catch you next time for another exciting exploration of legal precedent.
Until then.
See ya.